Today's topic, as Susan mentioned, is gluttony. And so when you hear the word gluttony, what comes to mind? What do you think of when you hear gluttony? Fat, overeating, right? Yeah. Pizza Ranch, Chinese buffet, something like that, right? Golden Corral. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So today we're talking about gluttony. But why are we talking about gluttony? Because we hate food at this church? No. Because remember what we're doing at the end of the month? We're having this giant all-you-can-eat pancake breakfast, right? And next week we're having a picnic where we're having walking tacos. So not that food is a bad thing, but gluttony is one of the seven deadly sins or one of the seven capital vices, which is a series we're doing. And so these seven deadly sins, these seven capital vices are some topics, some ideas that followers of Jesus have developed down through the centuries. And what they've looked at is they've said these are these root patterns, these habits, and that's why they call them capital. They're root. They're behind a lot of other things, and they're vices because they're habits, they're patterns, they're ways of living that lead us into other things, that lead us away. And so these Christian thinkers have said these seven things, and then with pride is kind of a root of all of those, are things that lead us astray. And we can look at these, and we have talked about these to help us diagnose what's going on in our life. So we talked about envy, and envy is this bitterness at another's good. We see something else somebody has, and it just really irks us. We don't like that they get the applause, and we want the applause for ourselves, and we're willing to even bring them down just for the sake of that. We talked about vainglory, and vainglory is this quest for applause, the desire to be recognized for whatever, but to be pointed out and to have people notice us and pat us on the back and tell us how good we're doing. And even with these two, you can think about, it's not just those things, but then what happens as a result of those. If we're seeking applause constantly, then we tend to manipulate other people. We see other people as just a source for our good and our thing. We talked about sloth, and we mentioned that sloth isn't just laying on the couch and watching TV all day long. Sloth is a spiritual habit in which we just aren't willing to do the hard work of looking inside of ourselves. Sloth is a spiritual thing. It can sometimes lead to that physical side, but it's a saying, I'm not really willing to do the hard work of letting God transform my life. It recognizes that we all need transformation, but that change and transformation takes work. We have these patterns, these habits of living, and we don't like to change. But God desires to change and make us something different, and sloth is avoiding that change. It can take the look of what we typically refer to as laziness, of just not reading our Bible, not praying, but it can also take the form of busyness, where we just engage in all sorts of church activities, and we volunteer for the festival, and we work in Sunday school, and we paint at the church. We do all these other things, and we feel like we're doing stuff for God, but we're not really working with God on this transformation inside of our hearts. We talked about greed and how money, and Paul talks about this, is the root of all kinds of evil, that this quest for possessions and possessing more is something that can shape us and cause us to do things we don't want to do. And greed is not something simply for the rich and the wealthy, but greed is something that affects all of us, this desire for possessions. And so today we're talking about gluttony. And so I want to clear up a few misconceptions about gluttony. But first of all, gluttony is not about all food being bad. Gluttony is not saying, well, food is bad and you should never eat, or it's a bad thing to enjoy your food. That's not what gluttony is about. We're going to come back and talk about what gluttony is, but I want you to start off and not start tuning out right away. And gluttony is often associated, we said, with being overweight, but there is not a simple correlation. Put it this way, being overweight does not equal being a glutton. Being overweight does not equal being a glutton. And being skinny doesn't mean you're not a glutton. Okay, so it's not a simple saying like, oh, if you're overweight, you must be a glutton, or if you're a glutton, you must be overweight. It doesn't work that way. You can be a glutton and be very skinny and thin. You can have a tiny little pencil waist and be a glutton. Or you can be a larger person and not be a glutton. There are all kinds of factors, but gluttony is not about our waist size. And avoiding gluttony is not about avoiding pleasure in eating. So when I'm talking about gluttony, I'm not saying there's something wrong with enjoying a good ice cream cone or a good deep slice of deep dish pizza or kale chips or whatever it is that you like. If you like kale chips, there's something just wrong, okay? But there's nothing wrong with enjoying food. That's not what gluttony, when I'm talking about gluttony. There's nothing wrong with enjoying food, whatever that is. In fact, the book of Isaiah says this, chapter 25. On this mountain, the Lord Almighty will prepare a feast of rich food for all peoples, a banquet of aged wine, the best of meats and the finest of wines. Jesus did miracles, and he provided fish and loaves for the people. He went to a wedding, and he created wine for the people, and they said, this is the best wine. So God is not opposed to good food. God is not opposed to us enjoying food and sitting down and having something and saying, wow, that was really good. Whatever it is, whether it's a cheesecake or a cheeseburger, there's nothing wrong with enjoying good food. So what is gluttony? Well, we get a hint of it in some of these scriptures we read. So we read in Isaiah, this words from the prophet where he's talking about, don't cling to these things which kind of fade away, but instead enjoy the things which last. And that's part of what gluttony gets at, is this idea where we start to look to food as everything, and we realize food doesn't last forever. Jesus, in his temptation here in the wilderness, he's out there in the wilderness and he's been fasting for 40 days, not eating for 40 days, and so consequently he's hungry. And then Satan comes along and says, hey, Jesus, you're the Son of God. You can take this rock here and you can turn it into a loaf of bread. You can fill your hunger. And Jesus says, man does not live by bread alone. And so gluttony gets at this contrast between what are we longing to fill ourselves with? Are we longing to fill ourselves with food? Or are we longing to fill ourselves with God and his goodness? And Paul gets at that too in that little line in the book of Philippians where he's talking about these enemies of it. He says their God is their stomach. Their God is their stomach. He doesn't go on to explain it. But part of what I think he's getting at is this idea that what does a God do? A God is the one who tells you how to do. A God is whom you serve. The God is the one you worship. And so in some way, these people's stomachs have become their God. And so we're going to look at what that looks like in the terms of gluttony. So Christian thinkers through the years have come up with a list of kind of five characteristics of being a glutton. Five ways we're glutton. And I tried to come up with a clever acronym and I gave up. You know, that's how what pastors do. We try and put all the words together. I couldn't come up with any help you remember it. So we're just going to kind of go through them. The first is what we'll call the picky eater, or in traditional terms, someone who eats too daintily. And by the picky eater, I'm not simply talking about the kid who will only eat spaghetti noodles with cheese on top. But the picky eater is the one who wants everything just a particular way. That's the person who goes to the restaurant and says, I'll have this item here, but could I substitute spinach for this? And could I take this off? And could you put this on the side? And could we... That's the picky eater, the one who just wants everything a particular way. And if it's not prepared just the right way, just the way they like it, it doesn't work out. And they get really upset because they want everything, and it's got to be done just right. And they want their toast and their tea, and it's, the toast has got to be a particular color of brown. And if it's not just the right color of brown, then it's not good. That's the big. And what's going on there? Why? How is that gluttony? Because it's this over-focus on the preparation of food, ignoring the people around you. It's looking and saying, this is what really matters. And it's this obsession with having the food just the right way. That if it's not done just the right way, it's not good. We realize food is meant to be enjoyed, but food is ultimately what? It's source for living and strength. And we can get so caught up in making sure it's just prepared just the right way that we ignore the people around us. Because gluttony then, if we think of in terms of how that becomes a root sin, then it's the case of you go to a friend's house and they prepare something and you say, well, you know, this is pretty good, but I like my crust a little flakier, and oh, the coffee is just a little too weak, and you see what happens there? You see what happens with gluttony? You say, well, why is it so bad? Why? Because it can affect our relationships with other people as we get so caught up. And it also then becomes what? It becomes all about who? You. And your tastes and your desires. And it really doesn't matter what anybody else, but you have to have it prepared just the right way. And so you see how gluttony can be the picky eater. Gluttony can also be the rich eater or the sumptuous eater. And this is the person who focuses on the rich foods, the meats and the cheeses and the creams and stuff. And why is that so bad? Because we're not eating just because the food tastes good. And that stuff usually tastes pretty good, doesn't it? But it's not about the food tasting good, but about the desire for the satisfaction of that feeling. that you're eating and you just want that feeling of saying, oh, that tastes so good. And what's going on there is you're allowing your feelings, your desires to control yourself. And that's why gluttony actually goes beyond, and gluttony can describe lots of other things. It can be, you can be a glutton for watching television, or a glutton for alcohol, or a glutton for doing all kinds of different things. And what happens is you focus purely on fulfilling your own desires. And so the rich eater, the sumptuous eater is saying, oh, I just like that feeling of feeling full, that feeling when I've eaten that big piece of cheesecake, and oh, it just feels so good to have that feeling. And so the focus isn't on the consumption of the food, the focus is on but it's the focus purely on this feeling and of having my desires filled. And when we begin to revolve our life around having our desires filled, it begins to affect how we relate to other people. And so you see these two things, there's nothing, you can be a really skinny person, you can be whatever, it's not about those things. And it's even this isn't even about the quantity of the food you eat. It's about that rich eater. The third one is the hasty eater, or the gulper. All right. You guys already know it, man. This is me half the time, all right? My family knows it. But, like, you haven't even finished one bite, and the next bite's going in the mouth, right? And you're just, you know, just the shoveler. But just going in and going in. And what's going on? It's like you're not even paying attention. This is kind of the opposite of enjoying the taste of it. This is just, I'm going to get it in as fast as I can. Yeah, it's just, yeah. And so, consequently, what can happen then is you get it, and this fourth one is related to this, the ravenous or the greedy eater. And part of that is that you eat quickly. I mean, there's the gulper who's just shoveling in, but there's the greedy eater, which is very similar, but the one who's kind of shoveling in because you want to make sure you get it before it runs out, right? You're looking and you're like, well, there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pieces. We better grab another one quick, right? Because I want to make sure I get my fill. Yeah, you can get a tomato. Or you're walking along and it's Thanksgiving dinner, it's Christmas dinner, and the buffet's all laid out, and everybody else is in the other room, and you walk by and think, right? And it's the grab. That's the greedy eater, the one who's saying. And again, what's happening? You're thinking solely about yourself. There's this direction on the self and filling my desires, and not being concerned with others, and realizing that eating is very much a social thing. It's interesting. I've served half dozen different churches, and all of them think like, oh, we really like doing food here. Every church likes doing food, okay? I mean, that's just in every culture, and it's the same way. You go and you're sitting with some Koreans, and they're like, oh, food is an important part of our culture. Then you're sitting with some Swedes, and they're saying, well, food is an important part of our culture. And then you're sitting with some Mexicans, and they're saying food is important. Food is a central element of every culture on earth. Every culture is a part of, why? Because it's a necessity in life, is eating food. And so food is a centerpiece of our culture, and part of it is gathering together with food. We saw Jesus, and one of the things he did was what? He often sat down and he had meals with people. In fact, at one point, Jesus was accused of being a glutton. And the point was, well, John the Baptist, he was fasting, and they picked on him for being fasting. Jesus was eating with people, and he said, well, you're a glutton. But Jesus enjoyed, and he recognized that food is this center piece, and that's what gluttony takes away. Is gluttony often, as you think about some of these things, is what it takes out the social aspect. It's so much focused on my wants, my desires, that ignores others. And one of the central commands that Jesus gave, Jesus said, the first and greatest command is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. And so we can see how being a glutton kind of takes out love for neighbor, because I'm so anxious to make sure I get enough that I ignore what others have. In fact, there's a story in the scripture. In the book of Corinthians, Paul is talking to the church. And in the early days of the church, when they celebrated communion, if you're around church and when we celebrate communion, what do you get? Little biscuit, little bread cube maybe, or a little wafer, a little glass juice. Theirs was a meal. And that's one of the reasons we do like our picnic in the pines and our potlucks on Communion Sunday, as a reminder that the feasts of the early church were something that was an entire meal. If you look in the book of Corinthians, around chapter 11, 12, and 13, Paul is talking about it. What happened in the early church was the people who were wealthy, the people who didn't have to work, would get to the meal early, and they'd scarf down all the food. And then the workers, the middle-class people who showed up later would arrive, and all the food would be gone. They were gluttons. They were seeking. They were filling only their desires. And do you see then how that would affect relationships if you were one of the people who showed up later? And like you're looking and you're saying, there's just that little bit at the bottom of the casserole you got to scrape off. And so that's the case of gluttony, because it's not paying attention to our neighbor. It's so focused on eating our own and wanting our own stuff that we don't. And so that's the greedy eater. And the fifth is the excessive eater. And this is the one we often associate with gluttony. This is the eating past fullness for the sake of indulging tastes. This is gluttony when you sit down and say, oh, I'm so full, but I can't really pass that up. And you grab that piece of dessert, right? This is, oh, I really shouldn't. And then what do? You take the piece, right? And that's what gluttony looks like. It's this excessive eater, because the focus is so much on, I just like feeling full. I like this desire. I like this taste. I like this food so much. Oh, that is so good. I can't stop having it. And why is it so bad? Why do we talk about this? You think, well, why in church are we so concerned about how many trips I make up to the buffet line at Golden Corral? Is it really that big a deal? It is, because there is a connection that God talks about consistently between our physical life and our spiritual life. Between our physical life and our spiritual life. And part of why gluttony is a concern is because if we can't control our eating, if we can't gain control of our eating, what other of our desires will we struggle to gain control over? So next week we're going to talk about lust, and there's a note in the bulletin, and as we talk about lust next week, if you didn't notice in the bulletin, for our younger audience, so like eighth grade and under, if parents, grandparents, if you don't want your kids here, we will have some. Normally you don't have anything in the summer, but we will have something next Sunday for those. I'm not going to get R-rated during the sermon by any stretch, but it will be a little bit PG-13, so just want you to be aware that we want to make it safe. And so that if you don't feel comfortable, depending on what you've talked with your kids about, not about, that we will make sure that's safe. But those are the kind of things. So gluttony is about this idea of, you know, if we can't limit ourselves on those things, if we can't control ourselves from those things, how are we going to keep our mouths from gossiping? How are we going to control our minds, our habits? And so that's why gluttony is this issue. And we can think about other areas of gluttony. And I was thinking about this was, it's interesting that binging used to be kind of this bad term, right? I mean, you would be, somebody's like, oh, I binge. But now, what do people binge on? Netflix or TV shows, right? And so, for some of you who aren't familiar, this is still a concept I'm trying to explain to my kids, that when we grew up, you had to wait a week for the next episode, right? And if you missed the episode, too bad, right? I mean, you were just out of luck. You might be able to catch a rerun in the summer, but not like, so, but now you can sit and you can watch an entire season of a television show, but just like start Saturday morning and go all day long, right? Or whatever it is, or the history, I mean, it doesn't even have to be a series, but something, and so we can binge on it, and it's become kind of this like, oh, I'm going to binge, but what are we doing? We're just sitting back, and we're just saying, oh, I want more, and it's a form of gluttony in some ways, to sit and to say, oh, I'm controlling my desires, and, you know, we fill ourselves with comfort food, things that make us feel good instead of being challenged by God. And so that's what Paul is getting at when he says their belly is their God. And what happens is we allow our physical desires to shape us in the unhealthy ways. And so gluttony is about food and other things where we look and we say we allow these things to shape us. Our God is the thing that we worship, the thing that we serve. And so our stomach becomes our desire, and so we begin to worship. And so what happens? Well, how many of you eat once and never get hungry again? Doesn't work that way, does it? And so part of what happens is that we realize that these foods, these things, only bring temporary satisfaction. And that's what Isaiah was getting at, was recognizing that you can have the best meal ever, but a week later you're still hungry. You're going to be hungry again. And so recognizing gluttony is saying that this is not the thing that will ultimately satisfy you. And there was a line in the hymn we sang during the offering, Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. Remember, it says, bread of heaven, what? Feed me till I want no more, right? And ultimately, why? Because the only thing, or I should say better, the only person who can truly satisfy or fill us is God. That food can't do that. And that's what gluttony is. Gluttony is this looking for something to desire, that we're missing something. And we know what that's like. I know what that's like. When you're hungry and you're feeling, and there's often a deep connection, what, between eating and loneliness, right? That when people get lonely, or I know for me, when I get stressed, when I'm stressed out, or sometimes when I, what do? I turn and I say, I just feel kind of down. I grab some ice cream, or I grab a piece of candy bar, whatever it is, and it's what? It's a stressing. It's a desire to fill something within us, but the truth is it doesn't last. And so gluttony is this looking for fulfillment, looking for something to fill us that really can't fill us, when it's God alone that can fulfill us. It's a pursuit of pleasure and something that doesn't last. And what happens is we pursue these things is it dulls our appreciation for the food we eat. It dulls our appreciation for the people we eat with. And it dulls our appreciation for God. I mean, all those things, it affects our appreciation. When we just are shoveling it in, when we're looking for that, it really causes us to ignore the people around us. So I want us to think about a couple things as we begin to wrap up, is how do I know the difference? Because maybe you're sitting and you're listening, you're saying, how do I know the difference between when I'm being a glutton and when I'm just enjoying food? How can I tell the difference? And so, when is savoring that pile of fresh fruit, that homemade bread, when is that good and proper enjoyment, and when is it gluttony? And it's hard, because our judgment is shaped by our desires, and our desires are shaped by our culture around us. Our desires are shaped by our habit. We watch television, look at ads, look at billboards, and what do they ultimately tell you? I mean, you've got this giant picture of a burger or a can of beer or a thing, and what does it say? It's pointing to all these things as what? These things will fulfill you. You know, if you buy this can of beer, there's going to be all these, you know, people with these great bodies showing up in bikinis and swimsuits, right? Usually doesn't work that way. Or if you just get this burger, if you get this food, you'll be dancing in the aisle. You see the commercials and people like, or if you pick the wrong food, if you pick that wrong brand of salsa, people will look at you like, oh, I can't believe you bought that salsa. And so we're shaped by culture to think about food in this way. So St. Augustine talked about right eating. St. Augustine was an early church thinker. Talked about right eating as being that which is appropriate in three areas. Three areas in which we think about right eating. One is our health. Does the way we eat contribute to our health? Is our quest for pleasure getting in the way of health? So we can think about our own health and say, is my desire for this affecting my health? And I'm really a big advocate of moderation. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the occasional piece of pizza or the piece of cheesecake, whatever it is that you like, the cheeseburger, the fries, the milkshake, all those things that go along with summertime. But is that your constant source of food? Is that the thing you always turn to? And so how is our eating appropriate to our health? Second thing is, how is our eating appropriate to the people we live with? Do we deprive others to satisfy ourselves? Does our desire for eating what gives us pleasure take precedence over those with whom we eat? Are we so concerned with the right food that we can't enjoy company? So if the food isn't prepared just right, if we get somewhere and somebody's maybe even served something we don't like a whole lot, does that take precedence? Does that ruin the whole meal for us? Do we arrive somewhere expecting, and someone's told you, and say, well, I'm going to make my special chicken and rice, and you show up and they say, oh, sorry, I burned it, and so we're having some Little Caesars. And you just can't stand Little Caesars. And you say, oh, man. And you let the whole meal, the whole conversation, the time with this person get ruined because you are so focused on, I really wanted the chicken and rice. That's when you have become a glutton. Because why? Because your desire for food that's satiated has taken precedence over your relationship with others. And you can think about other ways that might happen, where you look down on someone because of the way they eat or whatever. But it's about, the third thing is our vocation, that we're made for a greater purpose. And so you're thinking about the way we eat, does it fulfill our vocation? Does it fulfill our calling? And that's why sometimes we can't just look at somebody else and say, I can't believe they eat that way. Because sometimes people are eating away because of health concerns, because of the way their metabolism works. You know, if you have a woman who's pregnant with twins, she's going to eat a lot of food. And you're going to say, well, what? Or someone who's an athlete who's training tons and tons, they're going to be eating a lot of food. You say, well, look at that person. They're just shoveling food in their mouth. Well, that's because they need a lot more food. But how does our food and the way we consume food affect our vocation, our calling as servants of God? How is the way we consume food serve as a witness to the world around us? We live in a world of overconsumption. And that's just a fact here, especially in the United States. We consume way too much of everything. Too much food, too much plastic, too much clothes. I mean, we're gluttons for clothes. I mean, it's gotten to the point where there are clothing closets in place that don't want to take your clothes. Why? Because they've got so many. Because we just keep buying more and more clothes, and then we'll say, well, I wore this last week, I don't need that anymore, and it goes to Goodwill or to the Salvation Army or to the clothing closet. And you go in those places, and there's just stacks and stacks and stacks of clothes. And if most of us would go in our houses, we would find the same sort of thing. And so we say, how does this serve our witness? And then how does this consumption affect our ability to live out our calling in the world? It also ultimately affects, and I guess I would add a fourth one to what Augustine had, is how is our eating appropriate to our relationship with God? Do we sit down and are we truly thankful? And that's part of that greedy, that eater, that shoveler, is they're so consumed on, focused on filling themselves that they forget where the food comes from. They forget to pay attention to who God is and what God is doing. And so how does our eating of food, how does it affect our relationship with God? And are we seeking to have ourselves filled with God and His goodness? Are we seeking to find our desires, our hopes, our dreams filled by Him? Or are we finding it in something else? So Jesus, when He was hungry, and Satan says, well, you can do this. You can use your power for something else. Jesus was recognized that Satan was tempting Him to fill himself instead of being honoring God. He was tempting to fill himself instead of living out His calling. And so Jesus says, no, we don't live by bread alone. We can't live by our bread. We can't allow our God to be our stomach. But our God is God alone who lives in heaven. And He is the one who fills our desires. He's the one who comforts us and is. So those are some of the ways you can think about diagnosing yourselves with gluttony. So if you find yourself and you look back and you go think through some of yourself and say, yeah, sometimes I experience gluttony. Sometimes I'm with it. What can we do to reshape that? What are some practices that we can do that? The first I would suggest is think about the language we use related to food. And there's a couple things we do in our family and that are helpful in terms of that. And I'm just lifting up my family is a great example, but a way to think about food is one is the language we use related to food. One is the word starving. How often do you say, I mean, I used to say that all the time, like, oh, I find myself like, oh, I'm starving. No, starving is, no, we're not starving. But what does it say? It sets up this like, oh, I can't go another minute without food. And it does a couple things to us. One is it allows our stomach to control us more and more because, like, it's this, oh, I'm starving. I need something now. I need to get something now. And the other is it downplays the reality of people in the world who truly are starving. And so then when we hear about people starving in Sudan because of the civil war there, we say, oh, they're starving. And then we equate that with the fact that I haven't eaten in 6 hours. It's a big difference. There's a big difference between those two things. But that language, what happening is that's a pattern, that's a way of living. And the words we use, the way we act about it, begins to shape us. And so we begin to think, and so we begin to train ourselves that, one, we can't live without food for just a couple hours. I mean, I'm starving. Because that's what starving truly is being on the brink of not being able to live. And we're saying, well, I'm starving right now. I just need more. Probably not. Probably not. So that is one. The second word is the word love. And we talk about food, and sometimes we use that. It's like, oh, I love this. Dallas Willard says this. I want to read this quote. He says, love is not the same thing as desire. For I may desire something without wishing it well, much less willing its good. I might desire a chocolate ice cream cone, for example, but I do not wish it well. And he has defined love as desiring the best for someone else. But I do not wish it well. I wish to eat it. This is the difference between lust, mere desire, and love, between a man and a woman. Desire and love, of course, are compatible when desire is ruled by love. But many people today would unfortunately not even know the difference between them. Lizzie says, love is not the same thing as desire, for I may desire something without wishing it well, much less willing it good. I might desire a chocolate ice cream cone, for example, but I do not wish it well. I wish to eat it. But his point is, what's the language we use? Oh, I just love this food. And it really degrades the use of the word love, because love is truly desiring the best for someone else, wanting the best for that. And so that's why love is really connected to the person. But then it also begins to shape your view of food. If you love food, think about that kind of strange relationship. You're truly loving food. So that's one way you can do is start thinking about those language. And those are just two words, starving and love. And maybe think about, how do I use those words in relationship to food? And how might changing the language I use related to food change? You might think of some other ones and think, oh, maybe I don't need to use those words. Maybe there's better words I can use related to food that change my relationship. Second thing is being thankful. Just taking time before each meal, before each thing, and truly being thankful for the food you have and recognizing that it truly comes from God and God is the one who fills you. And so thankfulness can be recognizing that God provides for it. And so taking that time. The third thing is fasting. And fasting is taking a break, taking a time period. And it can be a fast, can be a total fast, or it can be a fast from a specific food. It might be a time period where we say, I'm not going to eat this kind of food for a while. And a couple of things on fasting is, Richard Foster says, fasting reveals the things that control us. And I would say fasting is one thing that's really, in a lot of ways, best done together. It's with somebody else saying, hey, let's take the next 30 days and we're going to fast. And maybe it's focusing on a particular food. Maybe it's eliminating something from your diet and saying, and what happens then is when you eliminate those things from your diet, maybe it's something that you always turn to, that one thing like, oh, you crave and you find, and here's another word that you might think of, I need, I need one of these. And and you're sitting there and you think, oh, I really need a Diet Coke. I really need some ice cream right now. I really need some. And what fasting does is it reveals the things that control us. And we learn to be content with simple foods. And it heightens our appreciation for foods. And it also increases our appetite for spiritual goods, because in fasting what we do is, and ideally with fasting, when you set something aside, you pick something up. And so when you fast and you say, well, I'm going to fast one meal a week. I'm going to take my Friday lunch and I'm going to fast for that meal. Don't just use that time to get some extra housework done. But instead, use that time for some scripture reading, for some times of prayer, for something. And what it's doing is, as you're getting a little bit hungry, as you feel that little bit of pang, that little bit of desire to say, oh my God, I'm hungry. Oh, I can't make it another hour. But what you do is you say, no, I can make it another hour. And what you're teaching yourself and what you're training your whole self to do is to say, I am not ruled by my desires. I am not ruled by my body telling me I need to do something. But instead, with God's power, I can control my desires. And that bleeds over into all other parts of our life when we have these desires and these wants. And we say, you see something in the store and you say, I need a new one of those. I need that new tool, or I need that new pair of shoes. I need that new. And what fasting does that Abs says, I don't need to be ruled by my desires. It's not saying desires are a bad thing, but it's saying we're not to be ruled by our desires. Our desires are not to rule us, or our stomach is not to be our God. So God desires us to enjoy life. God put Adam and Eve in a garden and gave them, he said, eat of the food, enjoy this wonderful bounty. God talks about the end times as this new creation being a great banquet table. God is not opposed to food, but what he is desirous of it is that our satisfaction, our hope, all our joy is found in him and not in food. And that's what gluttony is about, is finding our hope, is finding our desires, is finding everything filled in food. But with God's power, with God's help, and through the Spirit, we can be free of gluttony and we can find our contentment in God. We can find our contentment in Jesus, who is the only true source of contentment. So as you go on your way this week, may you find your contentment. May you be filled with Jesus. And may he be the one in whom you find contentment, not in the food you eat. Let's pray together. Our God, we thank you that you long to fill us. And God, we pray that you would forgive us when we seek out other things, whether in food or in alcohol or clothing or television shows, to fill ourselves and to find ourselves satisfied. But God, instead, by the power of your Spirit, may you help us to find fulfillment and to be filled by you and by you alone. And we ask this through the power of your Holy Spirit, in the name of the risen Jesus. Amen.